vision? What is the truth? What is real vision? Where should the focus be? What is the most productive object that can be viewed? The answer to every single one of these is identical. God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. God is all there is. There could be nothing else because God is infinite. Every quality about God is without limits. One could not think of anything at all that would be Christ-like or God-like or perfect or reflecting the incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, unless it was spiritual and perfect. Doesn't matter what the object is, the characteristics of it must be the same as every other real object, because everything is a reflection of the one and only God that exists. Since there is nothing but God, then everything is a reflection of that one God if it is real. And if it's not real, why should we be wasting our time other than to recognize that it is evil, that it is a mirage, that it is a figment of imagination, that it is fake news, that it is fictitious, and being fictitious, it has no existence. If it has no existence, why would we want to give it a single pulse of thought? There's no reason, and therefore, we absolutely refuse to do it. We're not going to pick up the phone, as Mr. Winslow refers to as an example, that is ringing all the time, trying to get our attention. It wants us to give it a home. It wants us to give it life. It wants us to look at it, look upon it as being real. It wants us to promulgate it. It wants us to compound it, multiply it, tell everyone about it, think about it, do everything we can that promotes it. If it's not true, we must not have anything at all to do with it other than to refute that it is real and explain the reason why. The reason? Because God is unlike anything except itself. Vision, seeing, knowing, these are all connected. Wisdom. We cannot exercise wisdom unless we have a sense of knowing. We must have a sense of seeing, looking, and recognizing and realizing what we are looking at. There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Our thinking creates our experience. If we let God do the thinking, if one desires fail-safe success, it's very simple. put your own preconceived ideas or thoughts or dreams totally aside and let your door to your consciousness, your thoughts, be open to whatever is being announced from the seven synonymous terms. In other words, what are they? What are the facts about each of the seven synonymous terms? In the language of the system of divine metaphysics that Mary Baker Eddy refers to at the bottom of page 146, where she says, science has now been reduced to a system. Let your focus be on listening about what is the system. One of the greatest resources that one could ever study and contemplate on is a book entitled Your Divinity Revealed by Helen M. Wright. Chapters 4 through 10, seven chapters, each one of the seven chapters is devoted exclusively to one of the seven synonymous terms. These are labeled as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Mind, as you may guess, includes creative ability. For we need to have a beginning, and creative ability gives us or offers us the opportunity to be creative in our ability to get started. Have the initial thoughts come to us, which create the original topic. Once we have listened enough to receive the original thought, which is the topic on which we would be focusing, we would then be ready to recognize and accept that the terms and the underlying qualities that relate to those terms of capability, capacity, functionality, facility, and other such related terms all come from the one source, which is the incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind. We don't have to have those individually. We just have to get our preconceived notions out of the way and let those qualities of God exercise themselves in our thought. It is an automatic process. Then if we think about omniscience, which is a part of mind, and realize that it includes all intelligence, wisdom, and knowing, and if we couple those qualities with the ones already mentioned, what is missing? Action. Mary Baker Eddy defines in the glossary on page 587 that good is God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, and omniaction. Therefore, if we recognize that all power that is real comes from God, each of those four terms are preceded with the four letters of O-M-N-I. That means one, only and all. So the only power is from God. The only omniscience is from God. The only presence is God. And the only action is God. Omniscience includes the terms knowing, wisdom, and intelligence. That means all of those qualities and their attributes have the only source of God. The only thing present is what is from God. And the only action is what is from God. So if we think of having the creative thought that gives us the original topic, and that the capacity, capability, functionality, facility, and all of those things and their related attributes and features and nature comes from God, and that that is coupled with the intelligence, wisdom, and knowing, all from God, and that is then combined into one bundle that is activated with the action of God, and that all of these things are omnipresent, we then come forth with a product that is the power that is produced by all of these things working together. Because power is strictly a measurement of all of these things working together. And that, of course, is because there is action that is dynamic. It doesn't matter what the topic is, the result is the same. And that is that it's going to be success with power. It's going to be omnipresent so that all mankind can benefit from it. It's going to be the result of wisdom and knowing, which, of course, is coupled with intelligence. The substance of everything is going to be spirit, because spirit is the only substance. And spirit is flawless, transparent, and as a result, reflective. So the activity and the power is going to be reflected out into the universe of thought. And that's why it is omnipresent, because it's reflecting the omnipresence of God, the source. It's going to be perceived by all the spiritual senses, which is soul. Those senses are seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling. But remember, since the only substance is spirit, those senses are all spiritual. They don't come and go. They're not up and down, in and out, deviating from perfection. They are always perfect. They're perfect because they're reflecting the perfection of spirit, the goodness of spirit. There's not a single thing that is mortal about the product, because the ingredients have all been spiritual. They've all been perfect. And therefore, the product is perfect. As stated, it doesn't matter what the topic is. It could be an action that relates to a homemaker, or a rocket scientist, a jet pilot, a race car driver, a businessman. It could be in any kind of business, as long as it is for the benefit of mankind. If it is for the benefit of all mankind, then it is going to be God-sourced. because God is the only source of something that benefits all mankind. When we think about soul, this directly relates to the topic of this treatment, which is vision, seeing. Because soul are the senses. That means the seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling are all spiritual. Spiritual seeing is perception. That's where we're filtering. We are deciding if it's something that we want to accept in thought or something that is going to be recognized as false and therefore unreal and therefore without any of the features that have been mentioned in this treatment. It's without creative ability. It's without capacity, without capability, without functionality, without facility. It's without intelligence, without knowing, without wisdom. It's without action. It's without presence. It's without power. Therefore, it can never be of value. It's going to be a mixture of truth and error with no real permanence. It's only going to be a temporary vision of something that is false. It's going to be a dilution of the truth, a deflection. It's going to be absent the genuineness of truth, of reality. And if we are utilizing our spiritual seeing, we will be able to filter out from the very onset so that it is not accepted into consciousness as truth. As mentioned, it doesn't matter what the topic is. It doesn't matter what our profession is, what our hobby is, what our avocation is. Whatever action we're involved in at the moment, these spiritual thoughts should be applied to it to give it a test to see if it's something that we want to have as a part of our experience or something that we recognize that is fake, that is a facade, that is a mirage, that is a misunderstanding. It is error from beginning to end because it is not the pure truth. About whatever the topic is, whatever the activity is, or whatever the event is, it doesn't matter. If it's not the pure, genuine article from God, then we want to nullify it before it has an opportunity to take root in our thought. It's a lot easier to prevent the root from taking place and getting started than it is to get rid of it once it has had an opportunity to be established as a part of thought. So the onset is where we want to get rid of it. When Bliss Knapp was around 8 or 10 years old, he accompanied his father, Ira Knapp, with a meeting with Mary Baker Eddy. And before the meeting started, they were apparently in the entryway, and it apparently was a warm day, and Mary Baker Eddy gave Bliss a fan. Now, you would think that that would probably be to cool the face. Maybe something to entertain Bliss, a young boy that was going to be by himself while Mary Baker Eddy and his father were in private in a room. without him being present. But there was a spiritual purpose in the fan being given to Bliss while he was going to be alone. And it was not to cool himself, other than if one thinks of the thoughts from God being cool, being refreshing, invigorating. Because that really was the purpose. It was to separate the thoughts from error from the thoughts of truth, from anything sourced from the infinite, incorporeal, divine, supreme mind, from anything that was a suggestion of mortal mind, something that would mess up the consciousness, would dilute the truth, would deflect the focus. Mary Baker Eddy sent a letter to a student about vision, and she says, "Are you able to focus no matter what comes your way?" Well, the fan, or the concept of that as a symbol, must be utilized to do exactly that, to separate truth from error. Take the wheat, get rid of the chaff. The chaff is no good, not something we want to have or hold on to, not something we want to even let into thought. Remember, thought is transparent if it is spiritual and reflective and reflects out into the universe of thought. The only thing we want to reflect out into the universe of thought is that which is flawless, pure, transparent, that which is full of the intelligence and wisdom and knowing of the incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind. As mentioned, it doesn't matter what the topic is. And we should include in everything that we're thinking about that it applies to all mankind. No one is excluded. All mankind is included. Every thought, speech, and action should be directed for the benefit of all mankind. We must be exercising the golden rule, putting out what we would like to receive. Nothing less. No dilution, no deflection, and don't let anything stop it or reverse it. So constantly think about the golden rule. Jesus, when asked about the most important commandment, he said, "Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul," and so forth. And he said, another one like unto it is, "Love your neighbor as yourself." Of course, he probably wouldn't have needed to add that, but he felt it was important to emphasize that so that somebody didn't think that loving God excludes loving all mankind. It's like the redwood sequoia trees. They are shallow surfaced. You don't have to dig very far to see the root system. But under that shallow surface of dirt, they bond together with all the other redwoods in that stand of trees. That's what we need to do. We need to realize that everyone is in one grand brotherhood. Because we're all connected to what? We're connected to God, the one and only source of all existence. Frederick L. Rawson had a wonderful instantaneous healing when a man had a load of rocks dumped on him. Of course, it was an accident, but he observed it, Mr. Rawson did, alongside with Mr. Spalding, a friend of his. both of them Christian Scientists. And when Mr. Rawson saw it, he said, with confidence and understanding, there is nothing but God. And with that, the man shot out of it from underneath the rocks like a rocket, totally unharmed. He was doing spiritual seeing. He was seeing only the truth about man. He was including all mankind in his thoughts, for he probably had never met the individual, didn't have any idea who he was, where he lived, or anything else about him. He only saw that it was something that was out of order. It was not in operating in the principle of God, which is harmonious and structured and systematic. It was chaos. It was a diversion from balance. He wanted to put it back into balance. And he did, with his understanding of the truth about man. And his thoughts touched on that experience and brought it into alignment with the truth. Our spiritual senses of seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling, all, if related to looking through the lens of spirit, will bring forth a result that is spiritual. It'll bring forth a result that is in balance. No chaos, but total smoothness with the calmness of the consciousness of truth. As noted, when the definition of God was recited, God is also life. The last words Mary Baker Eddy wrote on a little notepad next to her bed just before she left us in visible form was that God is my life. Our real life is not from eating food or any other bodily functions that are taking place that are considered normal. When we see a beautiful tree, we should be thinking about the life of that tree is not from the roots, not from the soil, not from the water, not from maybe care if it's been pruned and taken care of like a beautiful flower. No, the source is all from God. God is the only source. God is the primordial. That means number one. That means there's nothing that is more comprehensive, nothing more foundational than mind. Just like was cited from Shakespeare's poem, there's nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Or statement, maybe it's not considered a poem. So thinking is what makes it so. Our thoughts are what bring about our experience. Two different people can be looking at the same individual or the same event or the same object and be focusing on something totally different and therefore get a different viewpoint. If we look at God, one could be focusing on mind, another one on spirit, another one on soul, and so forth. And so therefore, the outstanding features that are occupying their thought could be different than the other individual that could be thinking about some other quality of God, some other synonymous term for God. It doesn't mean that there's conflict. To the contrary, it is all in coordinated as a network, just like the roots of the redwood sequoia trees. They all bond together. For example, if you were not using intelligence in your life, and remember, intelligence comes from mind, and life is a quality of itself, but if you were not using intelligence in the way you were living, you could be making some very big mistakes. Like when Jesus was tempted to jump off the cliff, and the devil, supposedly a devil, told him that God would save him, because it says so in the Bible. Jesus said, the Bible says, don't tempt the Lord thy God. He was using intelligence. So intelligence with action. Intelligence with his sense of what is right and wrong. His intelligence with seeing the truth. Well, intelligence should be combined with all of the other qualities of God. And the same with each of the qualities. We should give life to spirit, to substance. We should give life to the spiritual senses. They can't be static. If they're not dynamic, they don't do any good. All of the qualities reflect upon all of the other qualities so that they are all in one grand network. We have 7 treatments, really 8, because one is a combination of all of them, which is called God, and then each of the 7, which is the mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. So we have 8 treatments that focus on each of those 8 topics of God plus the 7 synonymous terms. And the focus of that and why they were provided to the world is to point out that the grand network includes all 8 of them, 8 being God, which is really a combination of the 7, and it shows that they all work together. All of those qualities work together, and all of their attributes. We could take the dictionary and divide it into 8 different things. One is each of the 7, and the other is something that shows the combination of all 7. Also, there's 4 operators, and I mentioned one, which is the Word, which is the facts about God. And the second one is the Christ, which is the translation or the interpretation of what we are thinking of as the facts about God. When something comes our way, we should be relating it immediately to what is God. And how we interpret what we are faced with is called the Christ. It's the translation. It's the interpretation. When Jesus saw blind Bartimaeus on the wayside as he was walking, he had to translate a blind man to one that was seeing, one with vision, which again is the topic of this treatment. And on the other hand, the individual that became Christ Jesus's patient had to be receptive to the truth. Mr. Winslow has a wonderful article on this, saying what thoughts must have gone through Jesus with all of the different things that Jesus said when he had this experience with the so-called blind man. Very, very interesting perspective that Mr. Winslow gave to that topic of that particular healing in which Jesus was involved. That's what we must do. We must be translating and interpreting. And if we do that with what we are faced with, just like Jesus was walking along the wayside and he crossed paths with this blind man, supposedly blind, he had to translate it. He had to see the perfect man. Well, what are we doing when we are faced with something that is a challenge, something that is outside of principle, something that is not balanced, but it is chaotic, something that is in conflict with the truth, something that is not appearing as being perfect, something that it does not appear to be from God. It could be an individual. It could be an event. It could be anything, like an accident. That doesn't seem to be like it should be coming from God. Well, we need to translate it. If we translate it, that could heal every single person that's involved in the accident. It could reverse the entire situation. That's what the ability is of the translation functionality of the operators of the system of divine metaphysics. So we have the word, which is, what is God all about? And remember, we cannot even recognize that unless we are ready to set aside the sense of material life, truth, and intelligence in matter. We have to be setting that aside. We have to come to the point in our consciousness that we realize that living along a life of materialism is not getting us where we want to go. It's not giving us the degree of success, of control, of our experience over what we're being faced with on a daily basis. And so we're ready to look for a higher dimension. We want to notch it up above where we are. And Mary Baker Eddy says in the very beginning of chapter 14 as an introductory quote from the Bible, precept upon precept, precept upon precept, here a little, there a little, or I guess it's precept upon precept and then line upon line, and then here a little, there a little. So she is telling us to take it a step at a time. Don't try to leap from being in total chaos to total harmony without realizing that we have to go through the steps of awakening our thought to the difference between truth and error. Letting our whole atmosphere of thought be reflecting the truth about God and the relationship between God and man, and the fact that God is the communicator. How does God communicate? Through his qualities. His qualities do not communicate chaos. They communicate harmony. And they do it by us exercising the qualities of God, which is the function of life. Principle is system and structure. So our life needs to be systematized and structured. That is the qualities of principle interacting with the qualities of life. We have to be exercising the golden rule in our life. Treating others exactly the way we would want to be treated. Most people think more about themselves than they do about others. Well, the golden rule reverses that and says, think about the others. Jesus wanted to be a servant to his disciples to show them that humility was a very important attribute. And so he washed their feet, just as Mary Magdalene washed Christ Jesus' feet. Walking along dirt paths with open sandals, you would think that from their knee on down in particular would get very dirty and dusty. So it was a common courtesy to wash the feet. I presume that probably means washing half of the leg. Get everything clean, and you know, you feel refreshed. I remember one of the noted actors said that he always kept an extra pair of shoes with him. And he would change in socks. And he would change socks and shoes in the middle of filming. And he would feel refreshed. Well, that's what we need to do. We need to cleanse our thoughts from the very depth, which is a symbol of the feet. foundation. We need to cleanse our thought so that we're looking from a fresh perspective with our vision. And we must include all mankind, like Mary Baker Eddy did multiple times a day. She prayed for all mankind, so we must know that all mankind has all these same capabilities and capacities and functionality and facility. The intelligence, wisdom, and knowing, the opportunity for utilizing the creative ability and the action, and knowing the presence of God, and therefore benefiting from the power of God. Everything we've been talking about, we must know, applies to all humanity. No one is excluded, because God is omnipresent. It is within everyone's thought if they will just put aside the veil which is concealing it. Everyone can be reflecting the same vision, the same seeing ability, because God is doing the seeing. One of the definitions of God in the glossary is that God is the great I am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal. Principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, and love. All-substance, intelligence. Notice she gives a little bit extra thrust to substance and intelligence at the end. Even though substance is included in spirit, and intelligence is included in mind, she gives a little extra emphasis to those two, reminding us, forget about trying to rely on individual intelligence or the substance of matter, because that's not what will be lasting. That's not what will deliver the goods. Truth is the next of the seven synonymous terms, and we must recognize that all humanity has the ability to see the truth, and nothing can conceal it. Right now, there's a lot of news about a supposed tragedy that took place in Israel. Well, some research will reveal that what we are seeing, if we're watching the news, is the opposite of the truth. The mainstream media is producing the opposite of the truth. When Moses freed the people from Egypt, they went through a lot of experiences to get into the land of Israel, to become Israelites. Those were Christian Jews. They were not Zionist. A lot of people think of Jews as all being one group, but they're not. It's like anything. There are good and bad. The Zionists are not the good. The children of Israel are the good. They're the ones that went through the desert and ended up realizing that they could depend on God as their source. Day by day, the manna fell. They had to not store up things in advance, but they had to recognize that their need would be met by God on a day-to-day basis. Those are the children of Israel. That's the New Jerusalem that Mary Baker Eddy referred to when she was accused of being prayerless by the mainstream media of her day. The same as the mainstream media of today. They produce nothing but fake news. They were producing fake news about her all the time. But what did she do? Did she argue with them? No. She acted just like Jesus did. She produced the truth, which refuted the error. She didn't argue with him. She said, I pray three times a day with my face toward the new Jerusalem, not the slaves of Egypt, not the Zionists. But New Jerusalem. I was surprised many years ago when a fellow who was a Jew said, I'm not a regular Jew, I'm a Christian Jew. I had no idea what he was talking about. I thought a Jew was a Jew. Not that I grew up in a prejudiced family, because we never talked about other religions in our family. We never talked about other people in our family. Never. I never saw a black man until I was, 18 years old when I went to college, because I drove through an area that was a black area. The tastiest hamburgers were available in that black area. They were called the White Castle hamburgers. Wow, they were delicious. They were cooked with onions. You could sit down and eat three or four of those and nothing flat. They gave you a discount if you bought 12. If you had a couple, three friends with you, boy, you could scarf up those 12 hamburgers and nothing flat. No. My dad was in business, and we lived in an area that had pretty severe winters sometimes, and so the family used to go to the south, where the weather was warm. And he hired black people, just like he did white people, to work for him. And whatever work they did, he paid them for that kind of work. It didn't matter what the color of the skin was. We never had any in the town where we lived, and I'd never seen one, as I said, until I went to college. But he treated them like everybody else. If he hired a Jew, I'm sure he would treat him like everyone else. Religion didn't have anything to do with the work somebody was doing. The color of their skin had nothing to do with the work they were doing. They all got the same pay. And boy, did he get in a lot of trouble when word got out that he was paying black people the same that he was white people. He told them to go get lost. He was paying based on the work they did, not on the color of their skin. Do we have a choice on what the color of our skin is? Do we have the choice on whether we were born as a Jew or a Gentile? There's bad Gentiles just like there are bad Jews. There are good Gentiles just like there are good Jews. There's good black people just like there's bad black people. Good white people just like there's bad white people. What someone inherits as a skin color or as a religion has nothing to do with who they really are. Are we going to see them with the vision of an unprejudiced thought? Are we going to see them as a brother, as an individual that is the same group of roots that we are, where they all bond together because God is the source? Or are we going to look upon them in a prejudiced manner? How would we like to be black or a Jew if we're white and be prejudiced against? We had nothing to do with our skin color, who our parents were. Whatever it is, it is. Doesn't matter where in the world we were born or what our skin color was or our religion or anything else. That's what we inherited. We may want to change it, but that's the way we are. I know a lot of black people love to wear white. And the ones that have money seem to always want to marry a white woman if it's a man. You know, athletes, for example, black athletes, they all seem to be married to white women. Beautiful white women. Well, that's their choice. Mary Baker Eddy says, we'll be plenty busy taking care of our own lives without criticizing someone else or trying to interfere with in their thoughts. Mr. Fluno, Dr. Fluno, has a beautiful article on criticism. Everything I'm talking about we have on our website in terms of articles and so forth, books. And everything is free. It's not really free because you have to do something. Number one, you have to give up your belief that life, truth, and intelligence isn't matter. If you don't have that desire, you're not going to get a thing out of what you download from our website. So is it free? Well, maybe there's no charge of money. But what do you get out of something if you have nothing invested in it? Probably nothing. If you make a donation to the website, you're probably going to get a lot more out of it than if you don't. Because you're making a contribution to those who are making it available to you. There's no requirement. I talked to a fellow that I'd known for many years. And I asked him, and we didn't talk very often, didn't have an occasion to. He had a website on Christian Science. And I asked him if they ever visited our website. He said, oh yeah, all the time. He said, my wife and I are downloading stuff all the time. We're, you know, every day we're listening to something from your website. He had never given a penny to our website. He'd never made a donation of anything. And it wasn't very long after I talked to him that he called us and asked for a donation. Can you imagine? Telling us how great it was and how he was depending upon all the things that he was getting from our website. And he had never made a single donation, period. He was in a position where he had to make, you know, where he had to humble himself to ask for money. We gave him $100. We figured he needed it. So we tried to help him meet his need in a little way. So nothing is free. You think you get a free email? They keep all your personal information and they sell it. They market it. Take away your entire identity. A lot of people have their identity stolen because they're so happy to sign agreements that they never read and put their name and address and everything like that into the website form. Nothing is free. If you want to get a benefit, you're going to have to make an investment in one way or the other. Maybe many ways. If you gain a lot from our website, do you tell other people about it? Or don't you want to share the good news? There are a lot of ways you can give. We have some people that give us their library. They've read the same book over and over, and they say, I don't really need this book anymore or these books anymore. We had one person that drove up with a Well, it was arranged in advance, but they drove up with a pickup truck, a small pickup truck that had 7 or 8 boxes of books. And it had some electronic media like thumbsticks with things on it. Things that we did not have. So there's a lot of ways you can give. We have another one that did some editing. They were an expert typist and executive secretary. And they devoted something like 2 years of typing up old manuscripts that couldn't be used and put them into, text format so that they could be uploaded for everyone to enjoy. 2 years. I mean, they devoted 8 or 10 hours a day, 6 or 7 days a week for 2 years. What a beautiful, beautiful donation they made to the website. It wasn't money, but it was what was needed. Money really usually is not what someone needs. What they need is something that they're missing, that they think they're missing. It could be food, shelter, or clothing. It could be a kind thought. It could be reading one of our treatments. Who knows what it is? Sharing is one of the most important things anyone can do. Well, that's what truth is about. Truth is consciousness and motive. And if we go through all of those six, then we get to love. Because love is the fulfillment. That's the consolidation. That's the compilation of the other six. And just as principle represents system and structure, love represents plan and design. Imagine each of the seven synonyms being a gear made out of steel and maybe perfectly engineered and machined so that they fit together perfectly. But have you ever heard steel against steel without any lubricant? There's a clanking noise. Love is the lubricant. Ray Baker Eddy defines love as being spiritual inspiration. It's the lubricant of all seven. So if you are using love, then it's smooth and quiet and coordinated, just like those trees bond together in quietness and strength. That's what love is. Love joins everything together. If you don't have love in your thinking, you're not going to come up with a good result. If you don't have love in your view, which should be spiritual, you're not going to be seeing the real view. If you don't have love in your soul, which are the senses of seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling, you're not going to have a very good image of what you're looking at. If you don't have love in your principle, which is your system and structure, and you're building a building, it's probably going to fall down. Because love means you're nurturing. Think of a woman, a mother, that nurtures her child, or a gardener that nurtures the flowers that he is raising and in charge of his flower garden. If he doesn't mother and nurture every element from the beginning to the end, he's not going to have the beautiful flowers that somebody else does that nurtures everything. This is all love. So we have to nurture life. We have to nurture every element. How about the golden rule? Are we nurturing every part of that golden rule? Truth. Are we measuring things accurately? Are we nurturing the qualities of being a carpenter, for example? How about a concrete mixer? Are we putting the right amount of water and sand and cement and rocks and whatever else we put in that mixture of concrete? Are we nurturing every aspect of it? How about if we're a teacher? Are we nurturing our children? Well, think of our consciousness as our children, if we're not a teacher of children. How about a superintendent of a Sunday school, or superintendent of a regular school, or a manager of a business, or a manager of a department? Are we nurturing every aspect? That's love. That's love. That's why it's the plan and design of everything. We have to be nurturing every aspect. And if we're doing that with mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, that means even love itself we need to nurture, then we really are going to bring about fulfillment. We're going to be bringing about success. a spiritual success that is going to be permanent. Totally permanent. Lasting forever. Because it's going to be built with the elements of God. It's going to be built with the elements of the qualities of God. Nothing can dilute it. In fact, this is called sealing the treatment, where we say and understandingly confirm that nothing in this treatment, all of the truth in this treatment, is permanent. It cannot be diluted, cannot be deflected. Can't be interfered with in any way. There can be no competition or opposition to it. Because truth is truth. Always true, never false. Are we letting that truth be our guide? Is that where our bar is? You know, in the sport of track and field, they have high jumps. They put the bar on two supports. And that's the standard that they need to raise above. And they keep raising the bar higher and higher. Where is our bar? Where is the bar? Where is the standard that we're going to use as the minimum? It should be perfection. That should be where our bar is, should be perfection. If we're in a relay race and we're carrying a baton, a little round thing that we hold in our hand, and we hand it off to the next runner, let's say you have four people in your relay race, maybe a 1 mile relay race, and you hand it off to somebody else after you've run a quarter of a mile, what is in that bar? What is in that baton that we're handing off? Are we nurturing every aspect of our performance so that we're striving for perfection? Forget about trying to beat someone else. You shouldn't be in competition with another individual. You should be in competition with getting rid of the error and affirming the truth, which means you should be running a perfect race based on the principles of running whatever race you're involved in. If you're in a marathon, it's the principles of running a marathon. If you're in a triathlon, it's the principles of each of the aspects of that triathlon. If you're a skydiver, the principles of the skydiving. If you're a ditch digger, if you're a homemaker, if you're a rocket scientist, if you're a jet pilot, race car driver, doesn't matter what you are. If you are nurturing every aspect of the principle that is related to what you're doing, then you are doing the translation correctly. I don't think I clearly said it, but the first is the word, which is the what God is all about. The second is the translation and interpretation. And the third is Christianity, which is the demonstration that we have translated properly and therefore bring about a healing. And once we have the healing, we have overcome the belief of life, truth, and intelligence in matter as it relates to that particular topic. And then we are into the science, which means that we are experiencing heaven on earth right now, right here, because it's omnipresent and we've uncovered it. Because we have nurtured all of the steps, all of the aspects of seeing and vision about that topic properly. As I started to relate, there is nothing that can dilute, divert, interfere with, compete with, oppose, stop or reverse the truth that is in this treatment, because it is the truth of God. It is permanent and it's sealed with love the lubricant that makes everything work together. Just like Mr. Rossin said, there is nothing but God. Amen.